At Arizona State University, we've made online education better, smarter, and more personalized so you can go further in your aspiring field.
I decided to pursue medicine once I realized that ASU did have the online program for biological sciences. You're still required to learn the same curriculum. You're still being tested on the same content that anyone would be tested on in person. The comprehensiveness of the program prepared me so well for medical school.
Explore over 350 plus programs at asuonline.asu.edu.
This is Extraordinary Lives, a podcast from Lad Bible where we speak to people with a unique story to tell. A warning that this episode contains content which you may find distressing. I'm Ben Powell Jones, and coming up in this episode...
Getting shot in my eye. Prove it. Point blank range in that, son. Bosh. And we've got to do him, he's going to kill my mum. So I've run down the stairs, I've run in the kitchen, I've put the leg right up against his neck, I said, f***ing touch my mum again, I'll f***ing kill you, do you know what I mean? And that was just Marv. So I was that. I was instant action.
Hi, and welcome to this episode of Extraordinary Lives, a Lad Bible podcast. We're joined today by Marvin Herbert. Marv, it's great to have you in the studio. We've done a couple of pieces with you previously, and you're a fascinating individual. But for any new viewers who haven't heard of you, could you briefly describe who you are and what you're known for?
My name's Marvin Herbert. I'm known for living a life of barbaric insanity. I led a life of crime from the age of 11 years of age up to 42, raging from everything from petty crime up to murder. I've been under investigation for murder, armed robbery, robbery, stabbing, shooting, theft, armed robbery, and taking and driving away. Actual bodily harm, GBH, Section 18, Section 20, like everything you can ever imagine being arrested for, but sexual offences is my journey, my story, my reality, you know?
It's a very clear introduction. And I'd love to start right at the beginning, if it's okay with you, because obviously you're someone, as you've just said, who lived a very unusual life with huge ups and huge downs. But where did it start? What was childhood like for you?
My childhood was... My childhood was normal to me. My childhood was, if I'm being honest, it wasn't a childhood. The first time someone asked me that question, I think I've done it on Lad Bible. I actually said I had a normal upbringing of... Obviously, because of my journey, I'm sort of transforming into a different person. So now I've realised that I never had a childhood. I had a couple of fleeting memories as a baby playing in a swimming pool. But after that, it's just been anger. It's just been hate. Frustration. It's been a life I wouldn't wish on anybody, if I'm being honest. It's a life I wouldn't wish on anybody. And now it's different, but the life I've led to get me where I am today, I wouldn't wish on anybody. I really wouldn't. And even talking about it nowadays, I can't talk about it without being angry or emotional. So depending on where I am will determine how I act. So when I'm with the street and I talk about my life, I have to be angry to talk about it so they can see the anger that got me where I am. But when I'm around normality, I kind of fall apart emotionally. It's weird. But I think that's because I'm becoming normal and I have empathy now, which I never used to have, you know? So, yeah. I'm trying to be the best human being I can be now because of what I've been through, do you know what I mean? And it's just, crime just doesn't pay. Crime just causes so much pain.
Would you rather I didn't ask questions about that period of your life?
No, do you know what? I need it.
Yeah.
This is what life's all about. And this is what these kids have got to see. Like, I'm a figure of power and strength. Like, resorted to this when I'm talking about my reality as a mature man. So it's not anything I want to hide. Yeah. It's not anything I need to be embarrassed about. Because it hurts being that man.
Mm.
It hurts being that man. Or it hurts being that man I was, if that makes sense. The pain that I've caused myself and my family. It's kind of now you realised. And that's the thing these kids have got to realise. It's not a joke. It's not a joke. And look, I'm 51. I'm a figure of power and strength in the gym. You can't trouble me in the gym. You can't trouble me in the ring. You can't trouble me emotionally. But when I talk about the pain I've caused and the life that I've led, it hurts, you know? Now, I'm proud of being the man I am. I really am proud of getting through that journey and coming up against them no good grooming parasite, parasitical adults that use young men to prosper. And I hate them like with a passion. So now I use that hate and that passion to drive me towards changing the narrative for these youngsters behind me.
Which is amazing. And I'm like, it's an amazing story. And I really want to get onto how you've got to do that. But I'm wondering if it's okay with you, if to help people understand your journey, I can ask you a few details.
Mate. You're the biggest platform in the world right now for what needs to be said. So okay. I need to hear what needs to be asked and I need to answer them as honestly as I can. So I'm not what they used to call a mug.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm not a mug. I can face it. I'm accountable for who I am and what I've been through. So if it hurts, it has to hurt.
Okay.
If I have to show the world how much... I'm big enough to do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm big enough to get involved in stabbing, shooting and robbing and doing all sorts of pretending it didn't matter. I didn't care then.
All right.
I care now.
Let's find out how someone ends up in that position. So let me ask you, when you say your childhood was one of basically anger, frustration, what does that look like?
Basically, like I've said, my hand got burned by my dad at 8 years of age. So think of looking at the man you love, the man you worship, the man you want to become, and then he just f***ing hurts you beyond belief. Like it's just you can't explain. Unless someone does that to you, you can't explain the power, the pain and the frustration it causes. And it was just something that got embedded in me, and I couldn't be hurt like that.
And why did he burn your hand?
Because I nicked a Star Bar and a Wrigley spearmint gum, and the store detectives brought me home, and he wanted to make an example of me. However, knowing what I know now, my dad was just trying to keep me away from what he knew was coming, what he knew I was going to become, and what he knew was there. And he was frightened as much as any man would be, and he didn't know how to deal with such a confident, powerful individual. And that's all I was. I was just too confident and too powerful for my own good, and it led me to where I got to. And now I use that strength and power for good reasons and good cause. So I'm glad I was that guy. I'm glad I am that guy, and I'm glad I've got that strength. So I'm glad he beat me the way he beat me, because it wouldn't have made me the man I am today. However, it's painful.
Of course. And when you say about he did that to you, he burnt your hands, was that a sort of like one-off event, or had your childhood been?
No, that was the second time he'd done it. He'd done it when I set the house on fire Christmas.
Right.
I set the house on fire Christmas, f***ing about with the fire in the coal, me and my brother. And then that happened. And then it was just, whatever happened, we just got the extreme amount of punishment. Mm. And that was just what I could never understand with him. But then I wouldn't be who I am today. I wouldn't be as fortunate as I am today to help as many people. So I thank my journey for doing what it done because of the choices I made.
Mm. And were you exposed to criminality at a young age?
Yeah. My dad was a drug dealer, high level. So all the drugs and all the money we see in the house was just there forever. That was all it was. I see guns from an early age.
Yeah.
I see like weapons from an early age. I see my dad try to cut my mum's head off. I see my dad beat my mum. We got bad. We got beaten. Like, we got beaten with belts. whips, like everything you get hit with, we got hit with, apart from penetrated with weapons. So we never got stabbed, but we got hit with pans. But like, you got beaten. You got,
yeah.
Like in the 70s and 80s, like nowadays the kids don't get it because back in the 70s, everyone got a beating, but we got extreme beatings.
So that was normal for you? Like it was normal. You hadn't had anything else?
That was normal. Even the teachers used to beat us up. Like, oh, you can't just look at my dad. You could get the belt from a teacher in school. Wow. Do you get it? So a teacher could take his belt off and whip you with a belt and not get nicked for it.
God.
Facts.
Wow.
Right, a teacher could weigh you in school and you couldn't get nicked. God. And then everyone's in the late 80s, everyone started fighting against the teachers, and then Pink Floyd made a tune, hey, teacher, leave them kids alone, because kids was abusing kids. Mm. The teachers was abusing all the kids forever. And it's only since the new millennium now that it's all stopped. Like a lot of my peers from the criminal fraternity have been sexually abused. Like, and a lot of them have been sexually abused, hence the reason why they're insane. Mm. I got physically abused, hence the reason why I became physically insane. Do you understand? So mentally insane. So everything has a reason, and everybody's got to be accountable for their reasons and their choices and everything they go through, you know?
I remember you talking before. Do you mind telling us a story about, because it was a turning point, wasn't there, when you basically decided you'd have enough of the physical abuse at home with your dad?
Oh, you know what? I just got that bayonet as well, you know? Damn, I got that bayonet 2 days ago. The bayonet.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
That's all about. So basically what happened is I've been nicking puff off my dad for years and my brothers, everyone nicked my puff. Basically, by the time I was 14, 15, I was nicking parcels from delivery vans. Right, so vans would deliver wholesale stuff to the streets, the high street shops, like the JD's, the Woodass, and we used to rob them delivery vans. And then basically we're in my ass one day, going through a lot of stock with Nick, and my dad turned up to get whatever he left in my house with my mum. And obviously it weren't there, so he started beating my mum up because he fought my mum, because my mum was a bit of a flyer. The mum was a road woman. She lived on the road, she lived for the road, she worked on the road, she'd done everything. So when he's come home, he fought my mum and nicked it, so he's beating my mum up. So me and my pals are in my room, and we can hear my mum getting beaten up. So I had a bayonet, and I've got it now. I wish I'd have bought it now. Damn! Right, so what I'm going to do, I'll take a video of that and send it to you.
Okay,
you
sure.
So you can show it. I'll show you.
All right.
Right?
Sure.
Got the bayonet. So now I've seen the bayonet on the floor, so I sent it to my pal, pick up a weapon up. We'll go and do him. We'll do my dad. We've got to do him. He's going to kill my mum. So I've run down the stairs. I've run in the kitchen. I've put the leg right up against his neck. I said, touch my mum again. Kill you, do you know what I mean? Touch my mum again and I'll kill you. And he was like, he backed up like that. As he backed up, I sort of pushed him and then he stepped back and then I sort of thought, his arsehole's gone. He's gone. And I pushed him back and I got him to the outside the house and then he off. And then basically I went...
How old are you here?
I think 14 or 15. 14. I was okay. 14, yeah. When he's gone, and this is why I've got the bayonet back, right? So now I've got to go one step further because my dad's a big man in North London, right? A place called Church Road. He used to do a lot of business. And it was very predominant with black-on-black crimes and violence. So basically there was a lot of heat in the area. So basically I thought, I've got to make an example. So I went and got a gun off my mate, yeah, which was a replica, but it was a 44 automatic Colt. And I put it down the back of my trousers. And when I've gone, when I took it, I've had to leave my bayonet as a deposit. Imagine
okay,
that.
Right.
So I've got the thing, I've left the bayonet as a deposit. Gone in, pulled a gun out and basically put it in my dad and said, never come to my ass again. No, I was talking to my dad and then one of his mates said something. So I pulled it out and put it on his mate. I said, blow your head off. And then basically I just said, my dad, never come back to my ass again. And told my mum, I'm going to blow your head off. And that was kind of like the turning point in my sort of growth as a man. I actually felt like the most powerful man on the planet after that day.
And did he not come back?
No, never came back. No. I still spoke to my dad, but to me he was only a mug then.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, he's a mug. That's in my head, he's a mug, he's a wanker, his arsehole went.
But when you went into that room with the replica, and it was a room of adults who presumably were involved in the game that you'd been like looking at when you were growing up, were you not afraid?
No, you don't. It's kind of mad when you're insane. You don't get scared of nothing, you know? Like, I was more, my intention was to impress more than suffer. So I didn't care. I had to impress everybody that I was doing this. So I was making a stand and I made an impact and I've done it from when I was a kid.
Mm.
And I'm doing it now. That's why I got to Downing Street. Imagine that.
Mm.
I got to Downing Street. How's that possible?
Yeah.
Do you understand what I'm saying? So I reach for the stars, mate, not the moon.
Okay, so basically you were going in there just thinking like,
I'm going to let my dad know. I'm going to let him know I've got this, and I had another tool here in case he went pear-shaped, do you know what I mean? But I was prepared for it.
Okay, so then you go back home, you're 14, did you say?
Yeah.
How did things progress after that?
Nothing, I just got back into drugs and got back in robbing and went up the ladder and started robbing more, doing more. I was a man of the ass. I fed my mum, fed my brothers, fed my sisters. And then I sort of fell in and out of relationships with my brothers and sisters because everybody made different choices in life to do different things. Mm. And I agreed with some of them, didn't agree with some of them, got on with some and never got on with some. But I've apart from the females in my family, I've basically stabbed and shot at and cut and punched and chopped my brothers and sisters. Not my sisters, but I beat my sisters up as a young man. I'm not proud of that, but I'm not going to hide behind the man I was. Mm. I mean, I beat one of my sisters up, two of my sisters up, unforgivably enough, and then I've stabbed my brothers. Mm. It was just nuts. It was just our normal. Violence was our normal. When you didn't agree with us, it was violence, and that was it. We all accepted violence when we were kids, and we all speak now apart from one sister. I speak to all my brothers and sisters apart from one. Do you know what I mean?
So, and what was your goal at that age? Was it just to survive?
Just be the man.
Were you looking at getting higher and higher?
I need to get as much money as possible to get the out.
Right.
I need to get as much money as possible to get the out. I need to be out of all of this. I need to be away from all this. That's why I moved up. That's why I ended up in Spain on my own. I never went on never around the world with a gang. I was Marvin Herbert on his own. I went and faced every adversity on my own. I felt every danger on my own. I felt every occasion on my own, every bit of fear on my own. I dealt with every situation on my own. There ain't a man on this planet who's backed me up. There's not a man on this planet who's backed me up today. And that's how it is. I wasn't that guy. Mm. I wasn't that guy.
So you've told us stories before. One of the ones I wanted to ask you about again was if you could retell the story about, is it the Camden Roundhouse? Is that where it happened?
Yeah.
There's a story about one of your mates who'd got beaten up or something like that.
Yeah, we was about 16, about 17, 18, 16, 17, 17, 18 it was. Because after this event, I got arrested for trying to shoot a bouncer.
Trying to shoot a what, sorry?
A bouncer, a doorman.
Oh, bouncer, right.
Doorman.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, so yeah. This escapade happened. And then the weekend or the night after this event, I was arrested for trying to shoot a bouncer.
Yeah, how old are you here?
17 or 18.
17 or 18, sorry, yeah.
Yeah, because then I got out when I was 19, so I was 17 or 18, or possibly 19, I could have been 19. Basically, there was a few kids around our area. We used to sell drugs and take drugs and party. A couple of kids had bought a couple of these off my mate, but they was a bit trippy. So they wanted their money back. Then because they wouldn't get their money back, they beat up my mate. And then it just escalated and escalated and escalated and escalated over the space of a year. And then after a year, they started attacking my friends' mums and friends' houses. And I was just like, what? No. And then basically I was driving down the road one night and someone flagged me down and said, you know, them lot are in the roundhouse. I was like, what are you talking about? He said, they're all in there. I said, who? He said, every single one of them. I said, are you joking? He said, no. So then I rang a couple of my mates. We went and got some ammonia, a baseball bat and a knife. And we went in and basically...
How many of you?
Three of us.
And how many of them?
I don't know, 15, 14, I don't know, 10, 12, 14, I don't know. There's a firm of them with their girlfriends. And unfortunately enough, one of my friend's girlfriends that was there on the night, she got a big split on her head. Because as I've gone like that with a baseball bat, I've caught her in the head, so I do apologise. And I've actually forgot your name, so I'm not saying it with any form of non-regret. I regret the night. Do you know what I'm saying? So as I've gone like that, it's bust her head open. And then the people that we was targeting got put on the floor. And then one of my friends stabbed them all up. And then we left.
So how does that work? So you get in there, there's three of you. Yeah. They're 14, 15 of them.
And we blinded them first.
Well, so you threw ammonia over them?
Threw ammonia over them. And then I targeted the ones we needed with the baseball bat. And then the other assailant come in and prep their legs so they couldn't get up and run. And then we just spoke to them in a way to let them know that if it continues, then we'll go one step further and people won't be getting up off the floor.
How do you, I mean, to someone like me, the thought of three of you as like quite a young man still going in against a firm, 15 people, that just sounds absolutely terrifying. Like how do you actually manage to keep your mind going through an event like that?
I don't know. I really don't know. It was a regular occurrence of 14 people, 15 people, 12 people. I've been stabbed up. Both my lungs have been punctured. I had another fight in Kentish Town in a place called Poshnosh when 13 or 14 boys from Hoxton over East London come in the bar and started taking liberties. I tried to calm it down and they didn't want to listen and it kicked off. Eventually, four of them got ended up in intensive care with head injuries, and I ended up getting stabbed and cut, and both my lungs got punctured, and I got taken to hospital. But it was a decent fight. We all got beaten up, and everyone got opened up, cut up, and I was fighting on my own. And one of my friends got thrown through the window. But then, I walked out of there. I walked out of there, and then when I walked back in, I collapsed. Yeah, I walked out and said, "Come on, you." Yeah, and the rest of them would run up the road. There was four or five of them on the floor, or three or four of them on the floor. And then basically I collapsed. My lungs, I couldn't breathe. And I collapsed and I ended up going in the hospital 3 days and back out again.
I remember you said once before, actually, when we were talking about the roundhouse thing before, you said you had like some signs about like when you went in there to fight those guys. You had like, if you rubbed your hair, it meant, do you remember this?
No, that's really right. So when we walk in, right, I'm here. My mate's there, my other mate's there.
Yeah.
So as one walks in, one's wearing a bandana, glasses, shuffles in. So when he's in place now and he knows who's there, he rubs his head, which means it's sweet. That means it's a go-go. It's a go-go. So one of my mates gone over there and made sure the ones that we need are there. So we're on the other side of the dance floor looking at him. As he's gone like that, we know they're there.
Right.
We know they're there. We know they're there. So what he does, as we're walking towards him, he moves over in front of the people that we're going to attack. So then what he does, when we get to him, he just steps aside and then we just splash them all up with the ammonia. And then you know you've got all the people in front of him, that's where they are. So you splash all them up and then they can't breathe. They run around running into each other. And then you just target the ones you need with the bat and then speak to them quietly in their ear holes and let them know that it's not going to end nicely.
But you're not scared that after you've spoken to them, you've left, were you not worried about repercussions?
No, they come to my house. Yeah, they come to my house about 12, 15 hours with their uncles. They come to my house with their uncles. But when they come to my house with my uncles, I come out the front door and I had, I think it was a pump accident. I'm not sure if it was a pump accident or something. I actually got arrested for these firearms anyway, so it's not an issue. With a pump accident. And I just said to them, take one more step and I'll blow your f***ing head off, mate. Do you know what I mean? Or come away from my house. What are you coming to my house for? And then basically, once they've all gone, never done nothing, they've all gone, I've gone out on a rampage and ended up getting nicked and arrested for trying to shoot one. I never actually tried to shoot them. Do you know what I mean? I never actually tried to shoot them.
Mm.
I did get nicked for the guns. Mm-hmm. They found the guns in the back of my house and then it got acquitted because one of the witnesses never turned up at court to say I tried to shoot him. So the case went apart, fell apart.
And when you're talking about going on a rampage and stuff, do you mind me asking you, I know you can't talk about everything and you might not want to, but how many actual crimes have you, like as a number, have you been investigated for?
Oh, really? I couldn't. Well, they say in the papers it's over 24 murders, 25 murders. I don't know. I really don't, because an investigation is something that the police are in control of. So it doesn't mean anything apart from they're investigating something. So because my name was so prominent in the criminal fraternity, anyone using my name is an investigation. I'm dragged into it. So I might not have been in it at all.
Mm.
It's just I'm in an investigation. Mm. It's wording with this stuff. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I've been on trial for 19 murders.
Mm.
I've been on trial for 19 murders.
And when you're in that lifestyle and you're someone that's seen as a kind of like big figure in that world, does being on trial for 19 murders back then, was that like a badge of honour almost? Like, was it like people know you were serious?
I'll know to mate. It's not a badge of honour. It's just like, how am I caught up in all this?
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Because I don't care what anyone says. No one does around 19, 20 murders. You don't do. The universe won't allow your mind to survive.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, you get affected mentally from these crimes and these actions and this lifestyle. Like, my life has been traumatic beyond belief because of the actions and the friendships I've kept. You know, because even though you're not responsible for pulling the trigger, the fact that you're connected to the energy, the system, and the program, and the coups that people do. So, I mean, you come on, you don't tell no one you're in it. Mm-hmm. You don't mark someone's card, you're in it. You don't tell the police you're in it. If you know, mm-hmm. you know in it. So I'll know too much. I'll know too much. So it's not nice. And that's the thing about that life. It's just, it's too much of a heavy weight to carry forever. Do you know what I mean? And people don't realise what they've got to carry when they get in. And then it cracks you up. So mm-hmm. it's not, it's, there ain't no one running around like doing all that stuff. And the ones that do end up in mental hospitals.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? So it's not a life to lead. Like anyone that gets involved in bad behaviour ends up going crazy or junkies. Like, and you can look at the statistics, yeah? I don't know. Look at all the hitmen. Look at all the hitmen's statistics. Look at their histories. Look at where they all end up. Anyone involved in gun crime, look where they end up. So, I mean, look where they end up. They end up mad, in a mental hospital, on medication, or dead, or in prison.
But you, when you're in that world, what you say makes complete sense. It's a really interesting take on it. But when you're in that world, presumably you need to be intimidated.
You have to be. Otherwise, you get killed.
Yeah.
You step up the ladder, right? You want to take a position. So you're a boss. You're a boss. And if you're not a boss, then you're a worker. If you're a worker, then you're a bitch. So what do you want to be? I never wanted to be a bitch. So I become a boss. And no one could be my boss. So I've done things at a level where I was my own boss.
Mm.
And I took the consequences with it, and I live with it, and I got on with it, and now I'm making great with it. So now it was... I wouldn't, if I could go back and do it all again, I wouldn't do it that way. Mm. I'd go university and I'd manipulate the system that way rather than manipulate the system with badness. Do you know what I'm saying? You're like, wow.
Mm.
Wow. I just think nowadays, wow. Like, what the fuck was I thinking? Do you know what I mean? Like, how could I think I was sensible? How could I think I was sensible living that life every day, leaving my house with a firearm every day, with a vest on every day?
A bulletproof vest?
Yeah. Not big bulky ones that you see on the movies. Like thinner than that T-shirt. Do you know what I mean? You wear it under T-shirts. Do you know what I mean? Made of Kevlar. Like, they're decent. Like, what do you see in the movies? All movies.
Yeah.
We never wore that.
But when you say you were leaving your house with a gun and a bulletproof vest every day, was that because there was, like, a real chance someone might try to kill you every day?
Every day. Yeah. Every day from, I'd say, 1997 to 2000 and... Well, 2012, I got my last eight Osman warnings. Do you know what Osman warnings? No. Threats to life. So it's when the police have to tell you your life is in extreme danger and there's a 99% chance you're going to get killed. They have to come and tell you.
Wow.
Yeah, and I got eight, and I'll show you, I'll send them to you as well. I got eight, the last eight of them was 2012.
So eight separate times the police came and said you were in extreme mortal danger.
I've had loads of them all in my life.
Wow. But like for a normal person, well, you are a normal person, but I mean, for a person not involved in that life, that would be a terrifying and high alert situation to be in. But when you're in that life, does it just become normal or does it always...
Bring it, mate.
Yeah.
Bring it. Bring it. Bring it. Bring it. The fuck? Bring it. What? You got a problem? What?
Mm.
If I got a problem, I'm going to show you what my problem is. Don't come and chat to me.
Mm.
And that was just Marv. And that was just Marv. That was just Marv. So I was that. I was instant action. Mm. Submit or action. Simple. Submit or action. And I was prepared to go to the death to do it. Getting shot in my eye. Proved it. Point blank range in that, son. Bosh. Yeah? Proves that I don't care. I didn't care. I said, do your job, you mug. Do your job. And then when he shot me, I said, do your job again.
Well, do you know what? You've just given me a perfect segue into that. Can we actually talk about that event? Can we talk about what led up to you being shot in the face?
A load of lies, cheating and led up to that, me getting shot. Basically,
tell us about it.
Apparently, the story out there was this, right? That basically, someone took a watch off a friend of mine, mm-hmm. right? And didn't pay for it.
Mm.
3 weeks or a month later, my friend rang me up and asked me if I'm going to pay for the watch. I said, hasn't he paid you for it? He said, what? No. I said, what do you mean? And I thought, mate, I'll f***ing give that little squeak the money to pay for that. Why hasn't he paid for it? Mm. So I've rang him up. I said, why haven't you paid for the watch? He said, oh, what do you mean? What's it got to do with you? I said, what do you mean what's it got to do with me, you cheeky c***? Go and pay for the watch. And he's like, what? What are you sticking it on me for? I said, sticking it on you, you cheeky, no good rat. I said, go and pay for the watch, I'm going to punch your head in. Simple. And he went, what? I said, mate, where are you? He said, I'm down Port Benus. So I said, all right, sweet, I'm coming. So I've got me nephew, take that, I'll be back in a minute. I'll give him a .357 and I've got Nick for it as well.
So you get, why did you give the gun to your mate?
So I'm going to Port Bernouse. I can't kill someone in broad daylight in Port Bernouse. Do you know what I mean? So I'll give him the gun.
But you're not worried about walking in there unarmed?
I thought he'd have a weapon, a knife, a bat or something, but I weren't worried about that. I'll do him with that. Do you know what I mean? I'll do him with that. It's not an issue. So that means I've gone down there and then basically I've seen his mate, had a few words with him. He never spoke any sense. So then basically he asked me to come back and come back to the gym and speak to him. I said, no, if he's going to get a tool, because obviously when I've sat down with his mate, I've realised he's going to get a tool. So if he's going to get a tool, I'll wait for him to come back. He can use it, mate. I ain't running. If he wants to see me now and he's brave enough, we'll see him. And I actually thought he'd come out of a bat or a big blade and I would have took a chop or a beat and I would have had it with him. Do you know what I mean? But when he pulled the gun out, I just said, well, do your job, mate. Do your job. I was walking towards him slowly and I thought, if I could grab his hand, I'll be all right. But I never got close enough. He done me in my leg. I fell over. And then as I've tried to get up, he shot me again. He went through my willy. Shot my willy out. It went down my willy as well. It went into my willy, down my willy, and shot my right testicle into my pants. And then I've tried to get up. As I've tried to get up, he shot me again. It went through the arm, off the floor, through the pelvis, and out the spine. And then as I fell back, and as I was getting up, he sort of walked towards me and went bang, bang. And that's when I thought I'm dead. And I've heard people walking about, and I've looked up, I've seen someone. I thought I was in heaven, and he was like, I was like, what's happening? I said, can you get my phone out of the car? And he ran up my car and got my phone. And I started making phone calls, letting people know what happened to me.
So how many times have you been shot at this point?
Five.
Five times, including twice in the face?
Yeah.
And you were saying, can you go and get my phone?
Yeah.
What's that?
So I had to let my people know that who done it.
No, I get it. But like, you'd been shot five times. How were you still moving around and talking to people and phoning people? How did you feel at the time? Can you remember it?
Yeah, I was a bit of pain, but you don't really feel nothing. It's too, like, you don't feel nothing. Like, everyone says, you don't feel, even when you get stabbed, you don't feel it.
Right.
Like, that's what I'm not scared of. You don't feel nothing after you get stitched up or after you feel it, but at the time you don't feel it, your adrenaline is too high, so I don't worry about it. I don't believe I'm going to die on that spot, so I'll just go steaming in. That's how I believe. In my heart and in my head, I've never been in a situation where I think I'm going to die here. I've always thought, you're going to be all right. You'll be sweet. Just get stuck in. So I'll get stuck in.
So was it your first time being shot that?
No. But that's...
Can we not talk about
it? Yeah, there was...
Don't say anything that's...
No. What happens is, it was a situation that was more of an accident than... an attack, so I don't talk about it.
Okay, fine.
Do you know what I mean? So, yeah, I got shot.
But you'd experienced it before. Like,
yeah, so you sort of knew what was happening.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. And then, at that point, so you'd been shot in the eye, hadn't you? So at that point, did you realise you were blind?
No, it just went numb. It just all went numb. But I could still see, though.
Oh, so you could? Right.
Yeah, right. I could still see.
So out of the other eye?
Yeah.
So then who did you call when you got your phone? Well, you eventually, okay, fine, I'll rephrase it. Eventually, you called the ambulance, didn't you?
Yeah. I rung the ambulance and they didn't believe me.
Right.
Because you got to call, it's called Helicopter Sanitarius.
Okay.
You got to sign up to a private medical. So when I've rung them and told them what happened, they hung up on me. And I had to wait for the police to turn up, for the police to ring the ambulance.
So at this point, are you not just, where are you again? Did you say you're in a gym?
Port Bernouse, I was outside Solly's bar, Solly's Diner. In Port Bernouse.
So you're just on the street?
Yeah.
So he shot you in broad daylight?
Outside all the restaurants, about 80s or 90 witnesses. He walked up to me barefaced, broad daylight.
Do you think that's because he was scared?
I don't know. You have an answer. I don't know why he'd done that. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? But me personally, it was only a 3 grand watch.
Right.
So after growing, learning and developing, I've actually realised it was for a greater purpose. But that's another story for another time.
Yeah. Okay. So you're lying there. The ambulance eventually turn up, and they find you shot five times, twice in the face. Presumably, lost quite a lot of blood.
Do you know what? I never bled. You know.
What?
Imagine that. My femoral artery got punctured. Right. I got punctured in 3 places, and I never bled.
So they turn up, you're there, and then, like, do you remember the next period of time, as in being taken?
I remember all of it, yeah.
You remember
going to the hospital, I remember telling doctor, keep the leg. I don't give a how much it cost. Because when he shot me and I've collapsed, yeah, because the femur had been shattered into so many pieces, right? So it just squashed. So my leg just looked deformed. Hmm. When I'm lying on the floor, my leg looked deformed. So when they got me in the hospital, I just said to the doctor, hey, doctor, I've got to keep my leg. I don't care how much it costs. It doesn't matter. Keep my leg. Do whatever you got to do. And then I woke up with 16 pins and a big plate, a platinum plate. From the whole, the plate is the whole size of my femur. There was 16 pins in it. And I woke up with that in.
And so you wake up and, like, obviously, I know you'll tell me if there's any stuff that you can't answer, but, like, what happened to the guy that had shot you?
He went and handed himself in.
Right.
Right, so I got shot, right? And then basically, what I done? When I first went to the hospital, because I was paranoid that they might come to the hospital to finish the attempt, yeah. Right? So what I've done is I've told everybody that I was dead, I was dying, I had septicemia. Do you know what I mean? Because I wanted to get better. I wanted my people around me in the hospital. So for the first 2 weeks, everyone thought I was dying. I sent people information. I rung the real small circle of friends that I have and said, I'm good. We were partying in the hospital. I was partying the very first time because I woke up buzzing that I was alive, yeah? So I was still active. I was still committing crime. So I was still doing things. I still had my team around me. So they was coming up to the hospital. I was making money. I was doing things. I was partying. I weren't sniffing because I never snuffed, but I was puffing. I was drinking, was having a laugh, was having a joke. And then I was telling everybody I had septicemia, looks like I'm going to die. And then basically I had to wait for the police to leave. So I had to tell the police they can't protect me no more, I need them to go. So then when they've gone, I've got a couple of bits and pieces in the hotel, in the hospital to make sure I'm protected. And that was it. Once I've let everybody know I'm fine and I'm bouncing back and I'm going to be back on road, they went and handed themselves into the police station with a prepared statement that said that I am a hitman. I am a hitman from London, yeah, that give Mark Ashman a watch, right? And then because he couldn't pay for it, I got paid to kill him. This is the statement they made to the police. They said to the police, I made a statement. They made a statement to the police that I was a hitman paid to come and collect the money for the watch and I come to shoot him. And when I started shooting him, he grabbed the gun and it went off 5 times accidentally. And that's what got me shot. That was their statement, prepared statement, facts. Right. So then basically they come to me and ask me what happened. I said, look, I don't know who it was that shot me. I've never seen him before in my life. I said, what I can tell you is this. I'm scared of no man but God and the deep blue sea. And that is it. And the only reason I'm not making a statement is because I'm a criminal in England and my whole family will disown me if I make a statement. Mm. And on that purpose, I'm not making a statement. I'm not in fear of my life. And so, that was the statement I made to the police.
So was anyone ever convicted of shooting?
Yeah, yeah. Mark Ashman got 8 years.
Okay.
He got 8 years.
Okay.
But he's all right. I want to join up with him now and do a course on forgiveness.
Okay.
And show the kids it ain't worth it. I got no problem with him. If it weren't for him, I wouldn't be where I am today. I wouldn't even be sitting here.
Yeah.
I'm all I'd be sitting in the prison cell. Or even dead. Do you know what I mean? So I actually appreciate what he done because no one else had the arsehole until he done it to do it.
So, I mean, that's amazing that you've come that far along that path. But when you're saying that when you woke up, like you, it sounds like you were, like you say, you were buzzing in the hospital, but were you not? I mean, there'd been some severe physical injury.
As soon as I wiggled my toes, mate, as soon as I wiggled my toes, I knew I was walking again.
Okay.
Simple.
Even though your eye was gone.
No. I didn't give a
Okay.
So I broke my leg every day for 18 months. Because they told me I can't do nothing and you got to do that. What? They told me to take all this stuff. So this is when I've become a vegan because I had to find out all the stuff that make my bones grow again. And I found out that dairy products are full of poison and they give you no calcium.
Okay.
So then I stopped taking calcium through milk and dairy products. And I started looking for vitamin B1, 6 and 12. Do you know what I mean? And all the vitamins I started looking for in all the foods. And I found out all the foods is in the greens and the roots and the berries and then I've just stopped eating all normal food.
And did they think you wouldn't walk again?
Yeah.
They told you wouldn't?
Again, yeah. So I'll never be able to walk again unaided. They said, I'll never be able to get more than a 90 degree bend in my leg, right?
For most people, I think what you've just described and being shot would have been a trigger to potentially change things, but it sounded like that wasn't the case for you. So what was it? What was the turning point for you when you changed?
If I'm being honest, is my own the right place?
Yes.
And basically, it was a combination of events, basically. So I got arrested in 2012 for four murders, and I got extradited from Spain to face trial. They reduced the original offences from murder to assisting an offender in the Dale Cregan trial. And then basically, when I got back to England, initially I thought I was going to be going away for a long time. And then when I see the evidence, I knew I'd been fitted up. And then basically I fought the case. And whilst I was on remand, a couple of people got arrested. And this was the first sort of ripple effect. So a couple of people have been nicked, and they've been nicked with a couple of tons of products. And basically when I see them in strange ways, they told me they was getting 6 years, which was unheard of from my generation. It started at 15 years and upwards, right? With a ton of anything, right? So when he said that, I was like, how are you going to do that? He said, well, I've made a deal already. Obviously my back went up straight away. I was like, what do you mean you made a deal? What are you talking about? He said, well, early indication. So I said, what are you talking about? He said, early indication. I said, what are you talking about? He said, well, early indication. I said, mate. Like, because at that time, I was still a criminal, right? So I'm thinking he's a snitch. So I'm saying, bruv, you need to tell me, what do you mean early indication? You're getting a six. How? I don't get it. No. Well, now, if you let the police know in the police station that you're going to plead guilty, you get 50% off. I'm only a minor role, so my maximum is 12 years, and I've been guaranteed six. I was like, shut up. He's like, yeah. Straight on the phone to my solicitor. I was like, is this right? He's like, yeah. That was the first point of my, wow, do you know what? Imagine if they nick someone and offer them no bird. What would they do for that? So they're getting, for 50% off their sentence, they get, I'm going to go guilty, gov. They get 50% off there and them. So what happens when they turn up and say, well, rather than do half of that, why don't you just give us a name and we'll let you out? Let us know what's going on and we'll let you out. How many people are not going to take that deal? Only 2%. So I'm dealing with 98% of people that are going to throw me under a bus when I move to another country to be safe doing the business, right? Now, what I've realised at that point is everybody I work with here can throw me under the bus there. So there's no point in being there. So there's no point in being in it. So I started questioning, wow, what am I going to do? And then basically I decided to do a little bit of bits and bobs, so they speak. And then one of the young kids that was working for me run a bill up to 200 grand. Now, bearing in mind they got the product at a price where they can double their profit, then there was no need to get in debt.
So how does someone like that get in debt? What does that
mean? Because basically I was nicked for four murders. So in their head, I weren't coming home.
Oh, so what, he'd been using your...
He's been taking. So when I got out and I've seen, because obviously you do your figures, I've gone out and I've seen my figures, I was like, how the f*** does he earn that much?
Right.
How? Cheeky little And I wanted to get him out. So then I put the feelers out and the messages out and got the kid lined up to get him done. And then I found out he's from my area, so I only said to shoot him in his legs. And then I found out he's my son's friend. And I thought, wow. So then basically I thought I'll teach him a lesson still. And then I thought the ripples affected me teaching him a lesson, the effects of my son, the effects of my extended family, you know, like, and it's just never-ending problems. So if I do anything to this kid and he dies or he ends up disabled, then my son, my cousins, my nephews, my aunties, their life ruined. So I thought, wow, I'm not going to do that. So what I'd done, I got the kid. I said to him, look, I'm going to sell your debt to someone else who is more likely to kill you. So you can either come off the road today, because I can't do this no more. And that was the day I come off the road in 2014. I'd just come off of every criminal, anything criminally motivated or anything that uses a young kid to go to prison or risk his life. I wouldn't do it no more. And that's what I chose to do in 2014.
So what you said to that guy, if you come off, the debt's written off. But if you want to keep doing it,
I'll sell it to someone else, you'll come and collect it. And he come off the road and he's become a real good person. He's got a good industry. He's in the music world and he's got a couple of really decent artists.
There's actually, because you mentioned this on a previous video we did, and there was a lot of comments of people on the video who think they know who that guy was. I don't know. Am I allowed to say?
You want to? Yeah, I don't know.
Charlie Sloth.
No.
Okay.
But Charlie Sloth is someone that I've known a very long time. And Charlie's out of his own mouth and said he wouldn't be where he is today if it wasn't for me getting involved at a certain stage of his life. Charlie's a very good friend, like a family member, and he's very close with my closest family member. So the closest person to me in my family is my cousin, Anthony, and Charlie's his best mate and has been for the last three decades.
So that's a connection between you and I see. Yeah.
Charlie's family, and he's a Scouser, so right. Sorry, Charlie, everyone knows you're a Scouser now. So.
So with that, did you at that point in time, did your son know that the danger that his friend was in from you, or was it all separated?
They didn't even know. No. They didn't know. My son didn't know what I'd done.
Yeah.
My family didn't know what I'd done.
Yeah.
They just knew I was a criminal.
Yeah.
And that I shot people and hurt people and I was investigated. Like my son knew I was, when I got nicked for murders, he didn't speak to me for a little while because he got brought up as a Catholic. So when I got nicked, he refused to speak to me. He refused to speak to me for 3 years. When I was in prison, he wouldn't speak to me because I was a murderer. He wouldn't speak to me because he said I was a murderer and he wouldn't speak to me throughout my whole sentence. And then towards the end of the sentence, he started coming round. And then I've tried to build it, but me and him still don't speak today. Do you know what I mean? And that hurts. You always want the best for your kids, and I always want my son to be a better version of me. However, he doesn't see that. He doesn't see what I want for him. He thinks I just want him to be me, and it isn't the case. I want him to be a much better version of me that lives a much better life than me in a much better way.
Mm.
However, he doesn't see that, and he doesn't understand that, so we still have conflict that we'll overcome eventually. We'll get through that, because I'm his dad. And I'll never give up. That's the sad thing about him. He knows I'll never give up. So he might be hurt. He might not understand why I've done what I've done. He might not appreciate why I've been where I've been. But when he has kids and he grows up, he might see things from a different perspective.
And when you came off the road, you made that decision, everything stopped from that day. What were you thinking you'd do with your life after that?
Well, I had a friend that had done it, and he used to work with a guy called Bobby Cummins.
Yeah.
Uncle Bobby Cummins.
Yeah.
Right, so we've had Uncle Bobby Cummins. So basically, my friend turned his life around with Bobby Cummins, and I thought, if he can do it, I can do it. So when I got out of jail, whilst I was in jail, I reached out to my pal, and I said, look, can you help us out? I'm going to do this when I come out. I want to get involved in what you're doing. Is there any room? He said, of course there is. If you're genuine. I said, mate, you know what? I'm fed up with this. I can't be bothered. So he said, if you're up for it, then we'll do it. We'll set it all up. So I started working with a company called the NOR Initiative when I got out. And basically, it just went from strength to strength, mate. And I started speaking in the London School of Economics or the London School of Entrepreneurs or some London school, something over London Bridge. And I met members of parliament, members of the police. I spoke out and they embraced me, and then they invited me to another event and another event and another event and another event and another event. Next thing, James English reached out to me, and it just went from there, and I've just been non-stop ever since. And it's just about making the youngsters understand now that they don't have to live that life. It ain't worth it for a minute, for a second, it ain't worth it. It's just not worth it. You're better off going to school. You better off spending a couple of years getting a qualification in something and building a business.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like I say, working, build a business. Build businesses, create work. Like, that's where I'm at, creating. So I'm in that journey now. I'm not working for no one, but I will create businesses for people to work for.
And do you think if someone like yourself had spoken to you as a young person, it could have made a positive impact and changed the path?
I wish I had someone like me. Do you know what I mean? I wish I had one of the old lot to tell me. And you always, ironically enough, I had someone, Eddie Topping, I bless you, mate. Like, he's dead now, rest his soul. My Eddie Topping used to beat me, you know. And he used to tell me, what are you doing, you mug? Don't be a mug. You're wasting your life. And I used to think he was an idiot. And I did, I used to think, oh, shut up, because I'm getting money. You're an idiot. You ain't got a clue. And when he died, it broke my heart, you know, because I couldn't thank him for trying to keep me away from the because it's all it brings 51-year-old bad to tears, talking to a room of strangers. Mm. Do you know what I mean? So that's the reality of that life. If you want to be bad enough and brave enough to be honest about it, then come on this platform and talk about it. And you'll see who's being real. Because if they can't be real with their emotions, then what's the point?
Mm. And when you look back now at your life, like, which is obviously, it is an extraordinary life. It's so different to so many people's lives. When you look back, like, what do you think is something you've learned as a person now at this point through your experiences? What have they taught you?
Be humble. Just to be humble and harmonious and don't be angry. There's no need for anger. There's just no need for anger. Anger is a suggestion and you can respond to anger. You don't need to react. So I'm working with, and I'll give Professor Steve Peters his props here, the chimp paradox. And I talk about it all the time. I couldn't have done it without that book.
Mm.
And I've reached out to them so many times to create a similar book for people like me from certain environments so they can understand it better. Because your voice winds people up from our world and we need a different voice. That's how to think about Dr. Steve Peters. But if you do a different voice, you might get a better result because there's people that need that book, people like me in abundance that need that
book. What is it? What does that book tell you about?
The Chimp Paradox is a mind management tool.
Okay.
It's amazing. Since reading that book, I'm where I am today.
Right.
I wouldn't be here today if it weren't for that book and Daniel Kinnan, to be fair. Although he's got his own little madness going on, that man told me how to be a man and how to be legit and how to be straight and how to be correct. And something coming from something that's perceived to be so toxic is unbelievable. So I'm spawned from nothing but trauma, and my positive outlook and outcome in life now, I believe will change certain things within our society, you know? And that's what I believe I was born to do now. People that he thinks he's easy, things like that. But people say, how do you do it? I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know how I've done it. I don't know. I don't know how I never got scared. I don't know how I never got frightened. I don't know. I just wasn't. Do you know what I mean? Mm. So I know the universe has done things with me because I've never felt the pain. Like, it don't hurt. Nothing hurts where I don't get up in the morning and carry on like. It hurts a little bit. Even my leg, it got shattered. I walked about. I got about 2 months after I got shot, I was about collecting money again. I was out doing business. Do you know what I mean? With a mashed up leg. So pain wasn't a thing that stopped me doing anything. But pain is the one thing that's drove me towards change. Do you know what I mean? And the change that I need isn't for myself. Do you know what I mean? It's for a part of society that's lost because of a certain mindset and programming. And they can change that. And I believe I'm going to be the driving force in that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if I'm the Pied Piper of creating new businesses, sustainable income and sustainable communities, then I've done a great job.
Mm.
So that's what I'm destined to be doing for the next couple of years.
Well, what I've got to say is that you're clearly someone that has like an amazingly strong will, an amazingly strong drive. And like for me personally, I'm really, really pleased that your focus is on those things now. Because you seem like someone that once you set your mind to something, whether it's walking again, it's changing your business, it gets done. So yeah, I'm really grateful that you're on the side of the universe now creating these opportunities and trying to, you know, break the cycle of what you were sadly born into. Well, look, it's been brilliant having you in. Really enjoyed talking to you. Really inspirational guy. And I wish you all the best.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Top man.
Come on. We'll do it again sometime.